This is episode 4 of the Roland Chidiac Connects podcast. Today I talk with Michelle Cordy, a grade 3 teacher in London, Ontario, who is on an urgent quest. Listen in, listen carefully, and enjoy. Hey Michelle, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Roland. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too. So you are not in Ontario right now.
I'm not. I'm bundled up here. I'm wearing a scarf and a sweater. It's a beautiful day in British Columbia. It's a rainy day, a good day to be inside. I had a nice big mountain bike ride this morning with some friends just before the rain hit, had some tacos, and now I'm here. So it's been a pretty perfect day.
Right on. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, because I know when I asked you, you said yes, no problem. And then it was a matter of figuring out my schedule and your schedule. I think it's really cool, though, that you're in BC and we're chatting. It just, I think, adds another layer for me as I sit here at my place in Ontario talking to you, connecting with you, because my podcast is called The Roland Chidiac Connects. Mm. So, yeah, it's all about connecting and chatting and talking about people's motivation, inspiration. So it's really good that you took the time to talk to me. And so I'm just going to ask you some questions, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things I've been reflecting on when I think about you and your practice. Is that okay?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome. So I met you, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago. So I met you on Twitter first. You were part of like EdTech chat and stuff like that. So
yeah,
we connected.
Back when I was like, I thought your name was RT. And I was like, this is my buddy RT. Like, oh, and then when I found out your name, Roland, I was like, I felt like we were at a higher level of connection. I was like, oh, right. I'm at the next level with my pal here.
I totally forgot that when I got on Twitter, I was apprehensive, like some people are, and I was not going to use my first name, but I was still going to be authentic. And so it was RT, because my middle name starts with T, right? So it's all good.
Will you tell us what your middle name is?
Sure. How about I'll tell you at the end?
Perfect.
Okay. Awesome. So yeah, no, RT Chidiac. And so we connected there. And then when I guess somehow through our chats or whatever, we figured out we were both going to be at the teacher learning and leadership training in Toronto, and you promised me a Hack the Classroom sticker.
I did.
If we met up.
Yes. And I kept those stickers in a cassette box. It's like what they carried them around in. Just like, not because it was that long ago, just because, right, I'm quirky like that. Yeah, that TLLP. And you know, was Jonathan So at that one too? I feel like maybe that would have been an
early connection. If he was, I never connected with him then. You were hanging out with Kyle Pierce at the time.
My boy. Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle, which I'd love to chat with him too. And so we ended up meeting up in the pub downstairs right outside the hotel where I did get my sticker. And that was the first time that I got to like hang out with you, the real you. Not the virtual you, yeah.
Well, hold up. The real me and the virtual me are very close, and that's something I actually work pretty hard at. You shouldn't work hard at it. It should actually be easy, but it's something I try to monitor. So hopefully you feel they're close, but just a deeper connection when you meet face to face, maybe is what you're saying, and I agree with that.
Yeah, what I mean by the real you is like just in real life, mm-hmm. And you're. Your online persona that I know does fit with the person face to face. So, I mean, that's cool. I don't know
but
if I
would never swear online, and that would probably be a major difference between my face to face hangout at a pub after and my online personality, which, you know, online me is squeaky clean or tries to be.
You were very well behaved though, so no worries. So that's when I did meet you then in real life, and I did get the sticker that you promised me, which was awesome. And then ever since then, I've seen you here and there, like at a GAF summit or at other TLLP trainings. And it's been really cool for me, from my perspective, to watch you progress over the past 3 years.
Thank you. So, and me, you, because you were a real darling of the TLLP program. They chose you as a leader to speak. So I've enjoyed watching your progress as well. Mutual admiration society here for sure.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, you threw me off there with that. But anyway,
compliments can be like that. I'm sorry. Just soak it in.
Well, and then if, keep going. If it's coming from Michelle Cordy, I'll take it. So thanks. I appreciate that. So over the past two, three years, whatever it's been really cool to see the things you've been doing and to read about the things you've been doing. And when I think of you and the things you do, the first word that comes to mind is deep. Like for me, you go deep. Like when you get into something, you go at it. I want to say you go at it hard, but I don't mean that. You go after it smart and you go after it in a passionate way. That's the way I see it. And
wow. Thank you.
I want to know, okay, what is it about you that causes you to do that?
So what is it about me that makes me like want to go deep and want to go hard? Is that that's the question? That's a fantastic question. I'm first of all very flattered, and I feel like I'm really glad that that is what you pick up from me, because I think that that's what I would say about myself. Maybe not quite as, you know, with more self-deprecating, and my husband would certainly say that about me. So what makes me go like that? I don't know. I like to get to the bottom of things. I think that I think it partially comes from years of being an athlete too. Like, you know, you either want to get to the top of something or the bottom of something. You want to see something through to its full completion. And just, I think that's always been just the way I operate on something. I get in a little bit and then I can see down the road where that project might go, or, and I want to get there. In educational technology specifically, from my earliest days being used, like having a Palm Pilot and using smart boards, which was so amazing. Like from that earliest time, I felt like there was so much chatter in between educators about how we might use these. And since my earliest kind of opportunities using technology in the classroom, I wanted to get like right to the source. I wanted to like connect with SMART and be like, okay, what are you imagining as a company that you could do with these products? And actually, you know, even before that, I graduated Teachers College in 2001, went straight into the classroom as you could at that time. And then less than 5 years later, I was back doing a master's degree, because I felt like I was only like half cooked. You know, I had a fantastic Teachers College experience, super fantastic instructors, great practicum experiences. The first 5 years of my career were so phenomenal. I happened to enter teaching at a time when there was lots of professional development. Times were good. It was before the economy went sideways in 2008. There was lots of money being spent on teacher development. And yet I still had this feeling like I wasn't getting the full story, or I wasn't getting like multiple sides of the story. So I went back in 2006 and did my master's degree. So I guess whether it's sports, whether it's educational research, whether it's technology, I've always been interested in like kind of trying to get to the end of the line or deep to the source and understand like how many different sides of something and how that thing is envisioned by somebody closest to it.
Okay. So you have an interest, and then you just kind of get into it, and you just keep going until you feel a satisfaction with what you're trying to accomplish or what you're trying to learn.
Yeah, I guess so. I sort of like, you know, it's like Alice through the Looking Glass. You kind of like eat the small cake and shrink and like go through a door and then another door and another door. And it's just like all of these questions lead to answers, lead to more questions, lead to more answers. And I've always kind of loved that sort of chase of asking and seeking and finding out. And I guess that's why I just feel so lucky to be an educator, is that there isn't one way to do it. And there's lots of opinion and there's lots of expertise, and going out after that is deeply satisfying to me.
I love what you said about there are different ways to get there. There are different ways to do things, because I think of a quote that I heard recently, and it's around entrepreneurship, but the quote goes something like, everything works. You just have to find what works for you. So, you know, when people are asking like, how do I get there? Like, for example, if somebody wanted to kind of emulate your successes and your accomplishments, it's almost like, well, you could get there by looking at Michelle Cordy and seeing what she's done, or you could look at somebody else. Like, there's a million ways to be successful, a million ways to achieve goals. It's just a matter of finding what works for you and what's most comfortable with you. And then I guess having enough guts to stick with it.
Absolutely. And like, I there's lots of people that I admire, but there's nobody I want to emulate because they're already done. And I don't think anyone should try to emulate me. First of all, I would choose someone more fantastic. Secondly, you know, another person could repeat exactly the same steps that I have done and not, and then have completely different results, possibly more successful, possibly look totally different. I think like the wonderful thing about the day and age that we live in is that what we really want is individuals doing their thing as part of a larger collective, right? You really want people to go do what they're passionate about, supported by passionate friends, and move forward. What you don't want is people trying to copy each other and be like, replicate something that's already been done. What you want is people to be inspired by each other and replicate partially, like get ideas, but then like make it better, like innovate on it and put a couple of ideas together and make it your own. And, you know, so copying can get you so far, but, you know, it's not the whole thing.
I'm glad you talked about innovation, because as you're talking, I'm thinking the same thing, that you can see things out there. You can see what works for people, and you can try it out and then, you know, add your own twists along the way. I think people don't realize how cool it is to be who you are, and that your path is going to involve connecting with others and taking the best from others and seeing if that works for you or assists you in some way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So
and like innovation comes from so many different places. Like I just recently came up with a great new project idea, which largely came from two other people. So I'm just lucky to be on board with them. But this idea came from three totally different people, myself and two others, that have totally different jobs in teaching, totally different skill sets. And it was like, we saw something cool that Keynote could do, Apple Keynote program could do. We went to a really cool art gallery, and then we put those ideas together and we're like, oh, project. Like, you know, like innovation, I think, is like bred from like people being like they're full on who they are. That's like the best case scenario to lead to something new.
That's a great definition. I've not heard it put that way, but I like that. It's so true. It reminds me of a project I worked on with two other people, a high school guidance counselor and a speech and language pathologist. Mm. And the three of us were put together to do some social media stuff for our school board. So it was really neat that you get these three different people with different experiences in social media and then just let them go. And it was one of the best projects I ever worked on, because it was so amazing to get to know these other two people and their worlds, because they live in a completely different world than a classroom teacher who at the time was teaching primary. So it's just very cool. It's a nice reminder, a nice reflection for me. Earlier when we were talking about how, when I asked you about, you know, what gets you going, and you were talking about how something interests you, you go after it. Have in the past 3 years with, you've been doing all kinds of amazing stuff. Have you ever jumped into something and then after a little bit decided this isn't working, this isn't for me, I don't really like this, I'm just
like
letting it go?
Every single time. Like, I don't think I've ever let anything go, but like every single time I jump into a new project, there's invariably a time. Doesn't this happen to you too? Maybe it just happens to me. I get to a point where I'm like, this is too hard. It's not going to get finished. I'm not the right person for this, for sure. Like every single time. I don't think, but was there something I started answering that question before you fully posed it. Were you asking if there's something I had abandoned?
Yeah.
Projects I've abandoned. There have been projects that didn't work out. You know, I was part of a year-long grant application with my mentor, and we were going after trying to we're trying to do research on makerspaces in the classroom because we felt that makerspaces were kind of potentially making a similar mistake that we've already lived through with computer labs. We're like, you know, people are getting rid of their computer labs because taking the whole class down to the computer lab is like this whole other special event. It needs to be embedded in the classroom. And now makerspaces are kind of falling the same way largely because of what they cost. So we were kind of like, let's skip ahead in the future when we're going to realize if makerspaces are really worthwhile. We're going to get to a point where we're going to think that that should be more integrated into the classroom. Could we do some research on that? What would that look like? So we were kind of like went down this path of seeking industry partners, looking at funding, looking at the research, and like, you know, you put a year into this thing and then all of a sudden, like, it just doesn't work out. So there's, you know, there's a lot of projects that you put a lot of time into and they just never see the light of day. But have I had a project that I've just fully bailed on? I mean, you know, I'm gonna tell a story and then that might trigger me to remember. I truly think that it is absolutely fair to quit a losing battle. I think when you get to a point where you realize that like you're not on the right track, provided that you aren't letting anybody down, or letting anybody down like too seriously, that you can't, that they're, you're going to put them in a bad situation. So like people being the most important thing, if you realize that something's really going sideways and you need to step out of it, I think there's a lot of honor actually in being able to identify that point and then being able to like tie up some loose ends and move on. I think it's dangerous, counterproductive and bad for education if we see everything through to completion because, you know, for whatever reason, because we're teachers and we feel that like, you know, completing tasks is good, or because there's ego involved and you're like, but I want this done to put on my resume, or because you just are like so married to something that you have that you want it done. I think it takes a lot of bravery to say like, this is not working. So through that, yes, I now remember something that I stepped out of. I was part of a project, and I won't give too many details because actually this is something I sort of regret. I was part of a project and I could see very clearly that like it was not going well, and that I didn't feel that it had a good direction. We were having a difficult time like coming up with a unified understanding of what the project was with a group of people. It had a tremendous amount of funding behind it, which made me feel like we should do so much more. And I said that I couldn't be part of the project because I just didn't feel that it had the direction. It was one of my worst moves ever, not because I regret stepping down from it. It was absolutely the right decision for me, but I learned one of the most valuable lessons. And the lesson that I learned was I put ideas before people in that case. And I regret that because I remember sitting in the boardroom and friends of mine were there, part of this team. And I only was talking about ideas and I was only talking about like the life cycle of this project. And I did not take the temperature of the people leading it. And I did not take enough care and understanding where those people were coming from. And I think I really hurt some people's feelings. And my lesson from that is that I never, ever wanted to put ideas before people because people were ultimately more important. I think I could have said I think the outcome could have been the exact same, but I think I could have put people's, I think I could have been kinder. And so from that point, I really tried to remember that like kindness is king, and you know, I could have stepped off it in a much more humanitarian way without just being so focused on ideas.
Thank you for sharing that and for basically disclosing that. There's a lot of power in what you just said because this, you know, I'm talking to you and I want to hear from you, but I can't help but relate to some of the things you've said in terms of there's so much going on and you get into this mode where I kind of feel like you. When I get into something, I go hard and it's like throw as many barriers as you want. I'm just going to knock them all out of the way. If I'm truly passionate about what I'm doing, it's not going to stop me. I'll just find a way around it. And I've done it so many times in my life that, you know, big things, little things, that it's a matter of my perspective and what I'm going to go after. And sometimes you don't get what you go after, but you take a lot from those experiences. And I'm listening to you talk about the experience of you having put ideas before people and the awareness you have now around it. And the way that you can talk about it is huge, because there's so many people that can't verbalize what you just did, maybe for a number of different reasons, in my opinion. You know, they're too scared or they don't want to admit defeat, whatever you want to call it. But I hear you talk this way and other people are going to hear what you just said. And I find it's going to be powerful. I mean, right away now I'm listening to you talk, and what a huge quote. You know what I mean? People come before ideas.
Totally. It was a painful lesson. Like, I feel a lot of shame actually. People before ideas, for sure. It just seems right. I mean, personal growth is so painful. Like, it's so painful to admit that I was, like, you know, so research focused and so idea focused. And I don't know. I should hope, you know, so we've known each other, you and I, for like 3 years. I should hope that in 3 years I'll be a, like, kinder, more peaceful, more intelligent person than I am now. It's such a painful process of trying to figure out how to do that. You have to look for that human size blind spot that we all have.
Right. But the fact that you can say that you need to look for that, I think, provides you with a lot of awareness, a lot of look fors, and then you're a reflective person as well. So you probably look back a lot more than you look forward. I'm assuming, maybe I'm incorrect and you'll tell me if I am, but I mean, I think for you to be able to say what you're saying, you have to be a reflective person. You have to step back. You have to think about things. You have to analyze situations in a way.
I think it's a balance. Like, you know, I do try to be, I think kindness is king. And I do try to look back, but I also, like, you know, but I also think that if you spend too much time analyzing and thinking about other people's perspective, you also get, like, tied up in a mud. So I also will plow through forward, like, pretty hard on something that I want to accomplish, but I just am learning how to do that with, you know, being a bit more sensitive. It just, you know, there's a balance there. If you spend too much time thinking about it, then there's, first of all, it's a bit self-absorbed, even that. And then secondly, you know, you gotta, like, get your work done and then also, like, you know, get home for dinner.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So you have to live your real life. Like, what I mean by that is your home life and your school life. And there's a lot of things going on. You're being pulled in many different directions all the time. So you're right. Balance is important. I'm listening to you say these things, and it's reminding me of my experiences in my school board's leadership program. Are you engaged or involved in any kind of processes to help you along to discern whether leadership is in your future in education?
Leadership is in my future. Leadership is in my present, and it's in my past. I am a leader. I think that teachers are leaders in so many different ways, whether you coach a school team. I think that's really important, whether you run students' council, just like the leadership that teachers exhibit in the classroom in terms of sharing, being part of PLNs, like, at all levels. I think that, like, you know, micro to macro, leadership is in all, like, in all of us, just how much maybe varies. I am not interested in capital L leadership, as in moving forward as an administrator or, you know, kind of moving into management at this time, if that's the kind of leadership that you're wondering about. And so the leadership opportunities that have been most valuable to me are something you've already mentioned, something that you've been a part of, is that teacher learning and leadership program. The TLLP in Ontario has been, like, absolutely one of the most important things to my career. I'm so grateful to the ministry, to the OTF, to the research that goes on behind it, by Carol Campbell et al. And her people. It's just been amazing. And I think that's why I can confidently say that I'm a leader past, present, and future, because of that program.
great. I wasn't totally focused on formal big L leadership, but the things you were saying resonated with the ideas that have been presented to me along the way in my leadership formation, I guess, because my school board has a leadership program that I've been engaged in. And so a lot of what you're saying sounds exactly like what they're saying, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, they always talk about people coming first, and they talk about, you know, being sensitive and being aware of what's going on around you. So I was just interested, a little side note there, yeah. But if I can swing it from big L leadership to, I guess, ed tech, educational leadership, I want to talk to you about, the GAF Summit keynote that you did in April, the closing keynote. And the reason why I want to talk to you about that is because from my perspective, that was like a huge coming out party for your concept I want you to talk about it, because what you presented at the end of that summit was huge in terms of getting people to realize the power that they have and the way to, the way to kind of make that power bigger and more collaborative. So could you just talk to us for a second about the topic of your closing keynote at the GAF Summit?
I'm pretty sure my keynote at the closing of GAF Summit was the same title that I used for my closing keynote at ISTE, and that is Show Up and Refuse to Leave. And the idea is that we should, what I think I need to do and what I would encourage others to do is find the place in education where you can make your greatest contribution and then show up to that place and refuse to leave until you are certain that your work there is done. That's a nice tie into small L leadership and big L leadership. It's like, just find your place where you can do that. And then the GAFE keynote had kind of like, there was a lot packed into that. I was like, really put a lot of ideas and information and things that I'd been thinking of. A big part of it was that transferred over to my closing keynote at ISTE was Nicholas Christakis' book. And he talks about all these amazing things that happen when you're connected. And so there was a big part on that and a bunch of other things as well. But the overall theme was show up and refuse to leave.
That's exactly how you live your life, isn't it?
I guess so. That's it. You know, it's kind of like my own little personal mantra. Like, whether it's mountain biking, like today I was on the trail, like we don't say show up and refuse to leave when we're mountain biking. We say commit or eat shh. So like whether it's mountain biking or teaching, there's a commitment line, and you know, there's a line where you're like, if I cross this line, I need to see this through to completion. If you're mountain biking, if you cross that line and you aren't confident about riding that stunt, you're going to crash and hurt yourself. So there's a point at which you have to like lean downhill and point it and go. And I guess, you know, there's the same in education where you have to kind of like, it's going to be bumpy and rough at times, but there's a point at which you have to be like, no, I'm here. I'm going to do the work that I want to do. And I'm going to find the positivity and the network that I need to accomplish that.
Okay. So you're asked to do a closing keynote. You call it GAFE. I call it GAF. I don't really know what it is. So nobody's ever corrected me. And I guess nobody's ever said anything to you, correct?
Correct.
Okay, fair enough. I just wanted to know, because if I'm saying it wrong, I want to fix it. But
I like GAFE because it, as a grade three teacher, it follows proper spelling pattern. Like it's like a long, it should be a long A sound because it ends with an E. And also because GAF sounds like a mistake. Like that was a GAF. It sounds like an error. So I always kind of am like uncomfortable when it's like, oh, the GAF summit. It sounds like mistake summit to me. Maybe I shouldn't have said that, but a lot of people say it, and then I inwardly chuckle.
It's cool. I don't like GAFE. I like GAF. I don't know why. I've never
believe Roland. Just you know, stick with it.
I was an ESL student when I was younger, so it's like I've already made all the English errors. Why stop now? Kind of thing. But anyway, okay. So you're asked to do the keynote. And the reason why I'm talking about the keynote and you brought up the ISTE one. So I think, you know, it's, I can kind of refer to it. To me, those are such big experiences where a person shares an idea or a concept. And really, for me, it's more than that. It's about them sharing who they are and what they're about.
Mm-hmm.
You get asked. Yeah. Well, that's perspective. Yeah. That's a keynote. I mean, it's the part
keynote is you stand up on stage and you pour your guts out to whoever is watching, and you hope beyond hope that it's your humanity and what you think is the most important thing will resonate just the tiniest bit with the people watching. And it is the hardest thing I have ever done. I will workshops, no problem. Get up there and talk about what you do in your classroom and just like show some tricks, like pull some bunnies out of a hat. Awesome. Keynote is like heart-wrenching.
Yeah, for sure. Keynote, in my opinion, is the person on stage is sending out a tidal wave of passion, of part of who they are is going out into the crowd. And, you know, these days, things are digital. So not only are you sending it out to the people sitting in front of you, you're sending it out in
it's getting periscopes.
Yeah, or it's going to be on YouTube or whatever. Like, it's going to be out there forever. And so that's...
I laugh and you're like up there being like completely vulnerable. It's tough to do for sure.
Yeah. That vulnerability though is part of its power, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't think a good keynote can be delivered without feeling that vulnerability. And it's easy for me to say, cause I've not done a keynote, but it's just, you know, my ideas around it.
You should, you would just kill. Like you would, oh my God, it's in you for sure.
That's very nice of you to say.
These podcasts are just your warm up.
Well, we'll see. Let's see how long these last. But okay, so keynote, you say yes because you're Michelle Cordy, and there's no way you're going to say no. Especially now, this is all my opinion. You're not going to say no because this is your thing. Like
not true. What's my thing, Roland?
Okay, it appears to me
time. What is my thing? You should know me. Is my thing keynoting or something else?
Your thing.
Please, oh God, that's something else.
Your thing is expressing your passion about what you're doing. In the classroom?
Yes.
Okay. But what you're doing in the classroom and your concepts and ideas that you're working with and mulling over and playing around with, people want to know. Like, when I thought about doing this podcast, I had a list of names of people that I had to hit up right away because I wanted, selfishly, to sit down for 30 to 45 minutes and talk to these people.
And you should. That's exactly what Tim Ferriss does with his podcast. Like Tim Ferriss, like totally, hugely, wildly successful author and like one of the best blogs I've ever heard, like in the entrepreneurial world. That was really his hack. You know, he just wanted to talk to people about how they did things in less time. Like how did they reach their excellent levels of like supreme radness, you know, and he wanted to be able to distill that for himself. So I think the ultimate hack is exactly what you're doing.
I'll take that. Tim Ferriss is great. I love him too. Okay. So how do you stay motivated as you're preparing for, let's talk about the GAFE keynote. Okay. It's in April. I have no idea when you started preparing, but I want to know because that's more than just doing something in the classroom and then blogging about it. Right? That mm-hmm. is huge. It's like you're preparing to go up in front of people, to be vulnerable, and to send out that tidal wave of who you are. So how do you stay motivated day in and day out as you prepare for something like that?
That's a great question. You know, EdTech team does great stuff and it's an honor to work for them. And that particular event is really special to me because I've been at every single one of those Waterloo, Ontario GAFE summits. I was at the very first one that was co-run by Echo. And haven't missed one. So that's like 4 years in a row I've been going. And, you know, now there's a whole bunch of them in Ontario. But at the time, like that was it. And that was kind of before, like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, you couldn't there wasn't all this amazing professional development available through Google. Like there was still Twitter, there's lots of stuff, but I think the landscape has changed a lot since then. Like that was really the spot where you were like, I'm going to go, I have some really geeky questions, I'm going to have my mind blown. So it was really special to me to be able to speak at that event, because I remembered 4 years ago when I had saw Jim Sill, Ken Shelton, Molly, all speak, all keynote, and just, you know, they're fantastic. And they kind of like, they were otherworldly to me and to all of us, I think, because we're like little Ontario and all of a sudden we had this kind of like larger event happening. So to be able to stand on that stage meant a lot to me. So as far as motivation, you know, that was something that I was really invested in. And I felt like I wanted to contribute back in a way that it had benefited me. And then, you know, the reality is that you've signed up, like you've agreed to do some work, and that you've just got to do it. Like there's a big element of like that date is coming, and you know, you will be standing there in front of people that you respect and admire who probably know the same things you do. What you gonna say? Get to work.
That would be motivating. But again, you know, you talk about it having a special place in your heart. So there was a connection there. So it's not like, you know, it came out of nowhere. You said, do you work for EdTech Team?
No, I do not work for EdTech Team directly. EdTech Team does have like employees, obviously, I guess. I am not one of them. They have like a business structure where they are like, they have like core employees. And then most of the people that work for EdTech Team are actually independent contractors. So I'm an independent contractor, and then I will occasionally work for them if I am, you know, so fortunate to be asked to go work for them. And then that's how that goes.
Awesome. Okay. The ISTE keynote, same type of deal. You're asked and you say yes. And you've been to ISTE before, correct?
I had. That was my fourth ISTE.
Okay. So it's not like you're a rookie at ISTE. I've never been. I'd love to go someday, but I didn't know that you had been that many times. So you're familiar with, you know, the way it works, and you probably connect with some of the same people you see every year just to say hello or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they ask you if you're willing to. Now, did they discover you based on the keynote that you gave at GAF?
No.
No. Okay. But you talked about the same type of thing.
I mean, you know, the thing is that I mean, I wish that I was just a fountain of amazing tons of ideas. But the reality is that like ideas take a long time to develop. And so some of the ideas that were in my GAF closing keynote are so near and dear to me that they had to stay through to that ISTE keynote. It's different too with different audiences. Like, I mean, like any piece of expressive text, whether it be written or spoken, you have to really think about what your audience is. And I really respect my audiences, and they're very different, Ontario to ISTE. So I took the things that I thought were most important from my GAF keynote, and then and those stayed, and the ones that I thought would be salient and meaningful across border, across a larger context, and then added some other stuff in too.
So it's almost like the stuff that you talked about at GAF, which is part of who you are and the way you operate, came out at ISTE because it's who you are and how you operate.
Totally who I am. Like, I mean, like the thing is, I mean, I talked about, I talked about books that I had read. You know, I talked about like sad selfies, you know, like being on a plane and like leaving a conference and having and feeling really like sad that it was over. Like that's just sort of like who I am. And like you said earlier, like a keynote is really a very personal thing. So, you know, there wasn't that much difference between me in April as it was me in June. So, and really like, a lot of the ideas that came out in those works were ideas that have been kind of started even several years ago. They just take a lot of time to develop and become central to your thinking.
Yeah, I agree. There are lots of things that I kind of do, And over time, one or two salient things will just kind of pop into your head. And it's almost like you own it in terms of the work you do and the experiences you have. And then all of a sudden, you can put all these things together and you have a concept or an idea that's different totally. Than what other people have.
My biggest design goal for speaking is that I want to be able to give a keynote or talk, not so much with workshops, like, but with these keynotes. And I'm not a super experienced keynoter, so I just want to put that out there. Like, this is all very new to me. Like, getting up and doing that kind of talk is like, there are much more experienced people than me that probably know this way more deeply. But for me, at this point in my career, at this point of my speaking development, I had one rule, and that rule was, I'm going to give a keynote that only I could give. I wanted to be absolutely sure that, number one, all of the content in my piece was original. I took every single photo. I designed every slide. I mean, obviously I didn't design the font, but, you know, as much as possible, I wanted it to be completely original. And all the videos I edited myself, it was all completely original. And I wanted it to be the case that if somebody else had my deck, they would not be able to give the talk that I gave. Like, only could, like, it could only come from me, and not in a selfish way. Like, this is mine and it's my IP and I'm proprietary about it. Just in terms of, like, actually it came from a place of being like, there are so many people that have such important things to say about education. The only thing I have to offer is my unique view on that, because I'm an individual and you're an individual. So the actually only game I have is to get up there and just be totally authentic and speak exactly about my experience and hope that resonates with others. I couldn't go from the broad to the specific. I had to start with me, the very small thing, and hope that that would resonate broadly. So my rule was, I had to give a keynote that only I could give, that wasn't transferable to somebody else. And they'd be like, oh yeah, these ideas. I mean, a lot of the ideas are totally transferable. Like, your podcast is called, you know, it's Roland Chidiac Connected Educator. No, what is the title?
Roland Chidiac Connects.
Roland, like, I talked about connection. Like, that's as old as the hills. But I talked about it from a perspective that was mine, that was influenced by the books that I read. I read a lot. And my thinking about it. So I don't know. I think we should do the work that only we can do, supported by people, of course. Like, not, you know, I got a lot of help with all that, but.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love the way you put it. I love the way you keep going back to who you are, right? It's about who I am. It's about my lived experiences. And then go from there. But that's something that people don't always do, right? People are like, I like what I see, and therefore I need to do what they're doing. Yeah, it's, I see it all the time.
And that's important too. Like, you know, there are some, I watched a lot of keynotes last year, a lot, like every single keynote that I could find. Not like TED Talks, but I was like, I watch as many educational technology keynotes as I possibly could last year, either like live or streamed online or parts of it. You know, I kind of wanted to know like what the format was, but that's just how I operate. Like, recently I was asked to write a foreword for a friend's book, for Kristen Wiedien and Karen Learman's book, Innovate with iPad, published through EdTech Team. Great book. Such a perfect read, perfect timing. And they asked me to write the foreword. So what do? I read like 100 forewords, and I'm like, okay, a foreword is roughly about this. Like, this is the format. Like, the thing is that it's kind of like Tim Ferriss in a way. Like, these things have a structure, and that structure is actually really important. Like, when you read a poem, you recognize it's a poem. When you read a novel, it's sort of a different way. So I think it's like, you have to respect that it's a form, and there's often a way to do it. I mean, I had huge support by EdTech Team. I went to like a keynote camp with them. There is like a way of doing it. But then right. you have the only original thing you can bring to it is yourself. For better, right. Or for worse.
Do the homework, put in the time, and then make it yours.
Yeah. And I would add a third thing to that, and like, get feedback, and some of that feedback ignore, and some of that feedback totally implement. And then at the end of the day, you have to stand up on that stage and be you. Because like, people can tell when I can tell. Can you tell? I mean, can you tell when somebody's up there and you're like, they feel authentic, they feel like a real person that's like plastic and you can talk to, or they feel very scripted and it's sort of like kind of like going through the motions? Like at the end of the day, you have to be like real live human, even if you're nervous. Like it's better to be nervous, I think, and let that shine through than be kind of like scripted and not authentic.
Yeah, like ultimately you have to be who you are, and people are, I think people read into that. I know when I'm listening to a keynote, or even if I'm in a presentation, if I think I've done enough presentations, I've done enough public speaking, that I know when somebody's standing up there and they're so nervous that they're just not being themselves. But there's a difference between being nervous and being who you are, and being nervous and just not being comfortable at all, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to go through the experience, I guess. Like for me, it's research, it's doing, putting in the time, and then it's feeling good about what you're doing. And what you said, feedback, which reminds me of how important it is to be a connected educator these days. Like, you know, once you have connections and you can ask people for assistance or to look at something, and if you're not connected with those people, it's a little bit harder. I mean, it's tough to cold call people and you have no idea how they're going to respond to you, but
it's not actually, I don't have a problem with that. Maybe it's something wrong with me, but I have like no problem asking me. I don't know. It's not that hard, because I feel like I'm very comfortable saying no. And I think other people should feel comfortable saying yes or no. And I think, I don't know. I'm pretty comfortable asking for stuff, and I'm try to like keep the energy moving and make sure that I do stuff too. Like when you ask me, like, will you podcast with me? Absolutely. Like that just kind of keeps the energy moving. Right. So I don't know. I think people should be comfortable asking. People will say no. And that's totally cool. Yeah, I don't spare a second thought about it. I'm like, no. Okay. Like I'm not like, oh, that terrible person. I'm like, oh, they're busy too, or it's not the right fit. I don't think you should be afraid. People should be afraid to ask. People should be afraid of not asking for feedback on stuff. That is scary. Going and doing something where you haven't checked it in with like your gut and then some of your people, that's scary.
Yeah, I would agree. That's scary. I think for me, if I'm going to ask somebody, then I have to make sure that I can basically pick up the slack. So when I asked you if you would come on and talk to me about motivation, inspiration, and things of that nature, and about what you do, I was ready for you to barrage me with questions, because that's the least I can do, is give you true, authentic answers about what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, what I might be talking to you about. So sometimes when I don't ask, that's where it comes from, that place of, I don't think I have what I need to back up what I'm asking for.
But that's fair. That's fair. I think that's really wise. There's this woman artist that I absolutely love. Her name's Amanda Palmer, and she's this like amazing musician, poet, writer. She's married also to Neil Gaiman, who in his own right is this incredible creative source and has done awesome literature and whatever. But she's, you know, she thinks that asking is like really important, and that it takes that asking somebody for help is like a great way to honor them. Like if I'm, and I think that's really cool. Like asking somebody to do something, you are like, you're saying, I think you are the person. Like it's a really a celebration of that person's like experience, knowledge, personal angle on something. Like it's such a, and you're putting yourself in such a vulnerable position when you ask, that you're really like putting yourself in like a servant position where you're like, will you help me? Like it's very vulnerable. It's very like respectful. I think it can just, you know, it can be a really flattering thing.
That's a great perspective. I really like that. And usually when I do ask people for feedback, I'm asking people that I truly trust. And, you know, I take a step back and put the ego away and really consider, this person could say some things that could really hurt. And the hurt is about me, not about them. And so, but that's the psychology of Roland, and we don't have enough time for that. But I know when people ask me for stuff, and I've not been asked too many times, but I think having become a Google certified innovator, and with the blogging and stuff like that, people have reached out to ask about stuff or for stuff. And I hate to say no, because I hated it when I asked for help and people just said flat out no. So, you know, but I try to be authentic in those situations. Like I listen to what they want, and then I talk to them about, do you really know what it is you're looking for? Do you really know what kind of work you might have to put in to do what it is you're asking about? Like, it's almost like I take on a coaching role where it's like, yeah, of course I will assist you, but in order for me to get you from point A to point B, there's a lot of things that have to happen in the middle. Like, there's a lot of things you need to be aware of, or have you connected with this person or that person, because to be honest, they are in better situation to provide you with the assistance you think you need. So it's like, I hate saying no. And I haven't had to, because nobody's flat out asked me for anything ridiculous or been so far out of the realm of, you know, being a kind person that it's, you know, I flat out said no. That doesn't happen. But I think what you said, like, I think back to people who said no to me and how it felt, and how they didn't take the time to get a feel for what it is I wanted and whether I really was serious about what I was asking them about. So,
but I think it's okay. Like, I think the no is okay, and I don't take it so, it doesn't bother me so much, because like, I think that's fair. You know, I think that kindness isn't necessarily woven into saying no to giving feedback or supporting someone. It's really more about like just recently somebody asked me to be like a mentor for a project. And I like really looked through the project and I was like, this is a really good project. There's a lot going on here. I'd really like to like have my teeth into this. I'm just not the right girl. Like it was about leadership in like the capital L kind of way. It was about system change. And I was like, I'm just not your girl. Like, this is all cool stuff, but I actually can't help you get this to the next stage. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's like, it's just about fit, right? And I think that it's not kind to say yes when you don't actually have the time, the capacity to help move somebody forward. You know, I think like you can say no. And that's like goes back to the whole thing I said earlier about putting people before ideas. Like, really, like, you know, how are you helping when you're not the right fit for something? You're not helping. You're in the way. Like, and just like having the sense of like whether or not that's the thing. Not that it isn't really hard to say no, but I think that, you know, it takes some thought as to, you can be kind and say no, I guess is my thought there, maybe.
The no that you're talking about, though, that makes complete sense, because you took the time to look things over and to think about it, and to think about, if you're talking about people first, then you're thinking about, is what you're about to do going to assist that person?
Yeah. Or am I just going to get in the way?
Right. Or if you're going to be so, not bummed out, but if like you don't feel like you're going to be effective, and then you have a right to say no in terms of, you know, being true to the process, totally. That's completely different. But when people flat out just say no because they're not being very nice, or there are other motives in the way or whatever for saying no, that's, I don't have time for that. But what
noise.
You're talking
that's
about,
noise. That's like,
yeah. Yeah. What you're talking about makes complete sense. And I think anybody would agree with you on that.
Cool.
One more thing. Well, two more things. The first thing is, I'm going to give you the final word on if somebody said to you, you know, I really want to go after something, I'm not sure where to start, what would you say to them? I know you basically told us already in the past, you know, 50 minutes, but I want you to have the final word on inspiration and motivation. And if somebody said, how do I get myself going? What would you say to them?
Start something, do something right away. Like, don't spend too much time thinking about it, or like thinking about the name of your blog, or like, you know, trying to get like down into the weeds with like, you know, what your business card is going to look like, or whatever, like, or what the end point is. Like, just start something really, really small. So get started, whether it's like a journal where you're writing stuff down and you're keeping notes. Like, don't just have thoughts and ideas and think that you're going to have those thoughts and ideas like in an hour, because you won't. They go away, Roland. They go away. Write stuff down. Do something. Do anything. Do something. Tell a friend. Not too many. Do something. And then I think that the most important thing, this won't surprise you, the most important thing sometimes is not trying to find the solution to a problem or the project that you want to do. Sometimes the more important thing is finding the people that you want to work with. Finding people that you want to work with leads to interesting problems, leads to finding interesting solutions. So I think being connected and looking for, trying to tap into what people are into really helps. And then, you know, find yourself, if you have a clear idea of what problem you want to solve, you need to find the people that are going to help you solve that problem. The experts that are already there, that are always available through their literature, through their blogging, whatever, you don't have to know them personally. Just find out who those experts are and like consume everything that they have. And then if you're really lucky, find somebody that's like into this something similar to you and like talk to them about it. So I think number one, get started. Number two, write stuff down. Number three, people. Can I say it again? People. Find some people that you can, that are experts and you can read their work, or people that have like a similar beat to you and you can rock out with them.
Excellent. Awesome. If people want to connect with you, Michelle, how can they do that?
They should come to Whistler, British Columbia with a bike and they should go biking with me and then have tacos. Failing that, I'm on Twitter at Cordy M, C-O-R-D-Y-M. I can be reached that way. And my email is C-O-R-D-Y-M-I-C-H, Cordy Mish or Cordy Mish, Cordy Mish at gmail.com. So people can email me directly that way, or reach out to me on social media, because I'm here mostly riding my bike right now, but I'm still here online.
That's because it's summer, and in Ontario, we don't go back to school until September 6th. So you still have some time to ride your bike and have fun out in BC.
Yeah, you know, I really believe in like big chunks. Like, well, I'm very fortunate that I can do this, but I think that off time is really important to the creative process.
Right on. So thanks for your time. I really appreciated you. You know, I mean, you're in BC, like, and you're talking to me for an hour. So I appreciate that. And I'm sure I'll be seeing you around on the interwebs.
You betcha. More come September, probably. Actually, as of August 21st, I'll probably plug back in a little bit more aggressively. Right now, if you follow me on social media, you're likely to see like the sick mountain biking, but we'll see you online for sure. And then more actively come late August, September. But thank you for this opportunity. You're such a light source. And you're doing a really nice thing talking about motivation. And I think we could all do with more positivity. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy lady, but I really appreciate it. And I'm glad we could connect and we could chat.
No problem.
Thanks, Michelle.